right, and welcome to Fast Break Breakfast NBA Podcast. My name is Keith, here all alone to record a solo interview episode. John and Chuck will be back later this week after we do our Grizzlies watch party. For those of you in Nashville, Tennessee, that watch party will be at Edley's East on Wednesday, November 30th for the Raptors game at 6:30. But anyway, my guest today is Josh Lloyd from the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast. Josh and I met a couple of years ago at Vegas Summer League, and we've kept up since then. His podcast is doing great on the Locked On Network. If you're a fantasy basketball fanatic, I assume you listen to him. He's a daily podcast all about fantasy basketball. But before we get there with the interview with Josh, I want to tell you guys about Loot Crate. Are you on a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles this holiday season? Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. So whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or you are that geek, go to Loot Crate and get the best surprise that you know is coming. This December, exclusive Rebellious Crate features items from Assassin's Creed, Mr. Robot, Firefly, and more, including an exclusive Funko Pop figure and a monthly t-shirt and pin. I have no idea what that is, but remember, these items are exclusive. So make sure you head to lootcrate.com/fastbreak and enter code FASTBREAK to save $3 off any new subscription today. Also, Fan Essentials, it's like Loot Crate, but for sports fans. Consider it as a gift for loved ones or for yourself this holiday season. If you are a serious sports fan and you want goodies delivered to your house every month, go to fanessentials.net. You get all the essentials you need. Use the code FBBF when ordering your Fan Essentials, and you get 30% off your order, and we get a couple of bucks. It's just one way that you can support the podcast. Another way you can support the podcast, the best way you can support the podcast, is to go to patreon.com/fastbreakbreakfast and contribute to us, and you get exclusive content such as our Slack channel, and there's a Pick'em League, and eventually we hope to eliminate the commercials that some of you will hear right now. My guest today is the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast and a fantasy analyst for Basketball Monster and other places, probably. Also, a repeat guest, Mr. Josh Lloyd. How are you?
Good, Keith. How you going?
Man, I'm doing great. Fantastic. Hunkered down in the baby dungeon, as we called it. There's a serious storm brewing in Nashville, Tennessee at the moment. I'm also dealing with either an illness or allergy. So, besides that, no complaints.
Sounds like good times all around.
Yeah, good times all around. So if I break down coughing, I apologize. Just a tickle. It won't ever go away. All right, Josh. So we are several weeks into the NBA season. 5 weeks, if you count my team's fantasy record. I know it because that's the number of losses I have. 0-5. Go on. It's a dynasty league. So maybe the first question is, in a dynasty league, when is it time to pull the plug and maybe tank?
I reckon you're probably at that spot now. If you're 0-5 now, you might as well just try. If you've got any older players on your team, I'd try and be selling those off for younger assets. You're positioning yourself for a couple of first round picks for next year and start building towards the future. I think because you might be able to recover and make yourself into a mid table team or get into the playoffs. But in terms of actually winning it might be tough from there. And you can set yourself up for the next 3-4 years if you make some shrewd decisions and grab some draft picks.
Yeah, I'm not even sure how the league works as far as building for. I am a total amateur when it comes to fantasy basketball, and I think I've told people this before. Like, I've only played fantasy basketball, like last year was the first year I played in one of your Red Rock listener leagues, and that was the first time I played fantasy basketball in like 20 years when fantasy basketball was completely different. But that being said, like, I don't even know all the rules of this dynasty league. I don't feel like our draft, because it's an auction draft, and then we get to keep some people, and there's like a college draft where we pick prospects. So I don't even know if tanking really, I don't even know if it actually pays off. I feel like maybe it's just picking up guys who are hurt for next year. Like, is it time to roster Chris Middleton? You know,
absolutely. Yeah, that's what I'd be looking. Look, if you've already got a college draft, so guys like, you know, Fultz and Smith and Tatum and Jackson and those guys are already gone, then yeah, it makes tanking tough. But yeah, you should be attacking guys like Middleton and even guys who are going to be limited for a lot of this season. I don't think you'd be going to be able to get Ben Simmons, but someone like him who's not going to contribute much this season. But Middleton's the number one guy.
Yeah, I'm still maintaining hope. We've lost a coin flip every week. It's been it's been a rough go. I was just checking. We got 11 weeks to turn this ship around, but maybe you will have the advice for me to get me there. So I'm curious. Actually, before we go any farther, where are my manners? I'm curious, Josh. Did you have a chance to eat breakfast?
It is what time? It's 9 a.m. here at the moment. We're recording it. I have not. I have got a cup of tea in front of me, so that qualifies as breakfast at the moment.
Yeah, that works. Are you? I can't remember. Are you a regular breakfast eater?
No, not at all. Very, very rarely.
That's right, because you're all living this leisurely. I work on basketball for a living. You're just rolling out of bed when you feel like it, flipping on those NBA games that come on like at the middle of the day over in Australia. Yeah,
11 a.m. starts here.
Yeah, that's just fantastic. So far, 5 weeks into the season, what's the big storyline for you this year? What are your big takeaways so far?
If we don't look at the top end of things, like the performances of, say, Anthony Davis and Westbrook and Harden and those sort of guys, which I guess was to be expected, especially Harden and Westbrook and Davis. We always had the concerns with his injuries, but he's flown back this season. I think it's more some of the frustrating coaching rotations has been one of the big things in fantasy. And we look at guys in Mike Malone in Denver. We look at what Frank Vogel's doing in Orlando. It's been extraordinarily frustrating for fantasy owners as well. Just that sort of stuff. Just coach or Jason Kidd in Milwaukee is always a pain for everybody. Just your coaches just having little faith with what they're doing, having no consistency, having no ability to instill confidence in younger players by continually moving their roles around, and seemingly from the outside not going with what would be the best for the team now and in the future as well. So that's been probably a source of frustration over the course of the fantasy season, impacting a lot of guys who were in line for some pretty big seasons but have been sort of hampered by the roles that have been thrust upon them.
Do you think that's going to be more of a thing going forward in the NBA as teams look to maybe balance the playing loads of their players and balance playing time and resting them for injury? Like, I don't know how closely you follow the NFL, but that became a thing where it used to always be like 10 years ago, you had like one good running back on every team, and now teams split carries and it became so frustrating. There's always the joke about like the Redskins, you never knew who's going to get the carries, and the Broncos, the same thing. So I wonder if that's the case where it's going to be like that going forward, where on the Magic, where now you have so many guys, and I don't know if their situation is the same where they're resting guys. They're just, who knows what's going
He's
on.
Bad.
Yeah. I mean, are the Magic giving us any guys who are doing anything in fantasy, or is the playing time so split up that none of them are able to really make a mark?
I'll touch on the first bit. Like, I've been saying it for the last 2 years that I think this is going to be the case, that you're going to have this small group of players who get their 32, 33, 34 minutes a game, and then you're going to have 100, 150 guys who get between 27 and 29 minutes, or 25 and 28 minutes. Instead of having all your starters play 32 minutes, you're going to have two or three guys play that, and then you're going to have six or seven guys on a team who will play 25 to 27 minutes, and varying depending on what the matchup is and how things are going form-wise, and very not such a delineated, these are my five best players and they play 30 plus. We're going to have two guys that anchor things, and you're going to have seven, eight guys that play 25 minutes apiece. And that's the way that it's heading. You look at the way that Luke Walton's running things in Los Angeles. Like, every player plays 22 to 28 minutes, basically. No one gets 30 minutes a night. Guys like D'Angelo Russell are playing less minutes this year than what they were last year. Julius Randle's not getting to 30 minutes. Brandon Ingram's at 25 minutes. They signed Tim Mozgov and Luol Deng to big contracts, and neither of them can crack 23 minutes a game. That's just the way that it's going in a lot of places. That's an extreme example, but that is a way that it's going across the league, where you're just spreading these minutes out. Now, as for Orlando, Evan Fournier is giving us pretty good value. I think what we saw in yesterday's game, the move of Alfred Payton to the bench, opened things up for Fournier in the offense a bit as well. He was really efficient. He's handling the ball a little bit more. But most players, with the exception of Fournier, have failed to live up to, I suppose, where they were drafted. And Nick Vucevic was always going too high in my mind. But yeah, the fact that they're splitting minutes with him and Biombo's impacting his ability to get back to what he's done in the past. Peyton's probably right at the right spot as to where he was drafted. And yeah, Bark has been a disappointment. And Aaron Gordon, I don't know what more I can say about him. It's been an absolute disaster. But it has been disastrous from him, but it's also been a disastrous management decision and coaching decisions, to be honest, because it hasn't worked either way.
How do you balance, and I don't know if you even have to balance, the dual nature of wanting a guy to do well in fantasy against wanting a team to do well? Like, my example is, you mentioned Mike Malone in Denver. Like, I've made no qualms about the fact that I'm completely enamored with Nikola Jokic. And so part of me, like the fantasy basketball, maybe just irrational fan, wants Nikola Jokic to be playing 35 minutes a night. But then maybe it actually is better for their basketball team, like, to, you know, because they can't really play him and Nurkic together, and Nurkic is a good player. And so maybe it is a good idea to have them staggered and both play, you know, like maybe 25, depending on the night, between 20 and 30 minutes. So I guess, since you are primarily just a fantasy analyst, you don't have to worry about those issues.
No, not really, because, you know, I like to look at it, because we're dealing with a real life perspective here. So I look at it from both ways. And in that case of Jokic, yeah, look, for fantasy, he's the best option there. But I'd argue in real life that he's considerably the best big man on that team, and it's not even close between him and Nurkic. And then you got Darrell Arthur and Kenneth Fareed and those sort of players. Even in the limited minutes over, look, his confidence was shot, Jokic, by playing at the four. He was out of position. He looked lost. They've moved him back to the center in that bench role. He's playing more minutes than Nurkic every single night. He's outplaying Nurkic every single night. Nurkic can't even get to 20 minutes anymore. And that's really the way that it should be. We saw 31 minutes from Jokic in yesterday's game, had a double-double. He gets assists, steals, and blocks. And so the fantasy part of me ties in with the real life part of me, because he is their best player. Not their best player. He's their best big man.
Right.
He's their best prospect by a significant margin. He had a historic rookie season, and there was no reason to play him out of position for such big stretches of time, especially when, and I've got no issue with them playing together 5 or 6 minutes. My issue with Malone was that if you've got two centers who are good, Nurkic and Jokic, right, there shouldn't be any situation where you don't have them on the floor so you can play noted defender Kenneth Fareed at center. That's my issue with it, and that's where my frustration came. But I think we're starting to see Jokic's confidence coming back and him getting back into big minutes, and the production starting to come, and it is sort of working itself out now.
Yeah, Jokic was one of my keepers, and his lack of production, it's been painful. It's been painful. But
it's coming back there.
Also, sticking with the Nuggets, I'm curious what your take is. Jamal Murray has had kind of a breakout stretch. He had four games in a row. I think he's averaging over 20 points per game. He came down a little bit in his most recent game. But I'm curious how you see him continuing this year. Do you think Jamal Murray is going to still hold value? Or is it once Will Barton is back in the lineup, and then when Gary Harris finally returns, is he going to get lost in the shuffle?
I like Murray a lot. I liked him a lot coming into the season, and yeah, he's been good. The return of Harris and Barton is a concern, but I think that people who expect Barton to do what he did last season are going to be the ones that are more disappointed, because Murray's going to cut into what Barton can do rather than the other way around. Barton's fine, but he's not a long-term prospect. He's not that good of a player, whereas that they're going to say, all right, let's give Barton 30 minutes a night and let's make DMPs for Murray. They're not going to do that. It is going to impact Murray's upside having Barton there, but it's not going to be a case where he gets eliminated from the roster. Harris is the big one, though, because Harris is going to come back. He's going to play 33 minutes. He's a key to what Malone does. He's a brilliant defender in that position. He's developing a lot. So when he comes back, and we're talking about in a few weeks still, and then for him to get back to full speed, that's going to be more of an issue. But I'm not really worried about Barton. I can see by the end of the year that Murray will be considerably ahead of Barton in the overall pecking order.
Looking at remembering back to some of your preseason picks, I'm curious, have there been any sleeper picks that you had that you were either totally wrong on or completely right about that you're feeling good about?
Oh, Aaron Gordon's obviously one of them. He was, I don't know if you had him as a sleeper pick, but I had him as a guy that was in that 60 to 90 range in that sort of area of the draft, and he's been outside the top 300 for the last 2 weeks. But that's a lot of that is to do with minutes and confidence. And prior to him getting benched, he was ranked 100th. So he wasn't too far off, but now he's playing 22, 23 minutes a night in a role behind someone who's literally the worst starter in the NBA. So that's been a frustrating thing. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson started off the season horribly. He was a guy that we thought was going to take a pretty big leap forward and have a consistent role. But Kenny Atkinson's doing the Luke Walton thing where nobody's getting 30 minutes a night. Everyone's getting 24, 25 minutes a night. So that's obviously impacting what Hollis Jefferson can do. And Dennis Schroeder's been a little bit of a disappointment to start the year. His defensive numbers in particular have been well down. But I think once he gets his steal numbers back up, his overall ranking will jump back up. He's barely gotten any steals this year, actually less than what he got last year in like an extra 10 minutes a game. So I think that he can jump back up from there, given his history of being a pretty good on-ball defender and being someone who can get those steals. As for guys that I like that have worked out, I was pretty big on Anthony Davis this season. I said I didn't really base it or anything. I just said I've got a gut feel that he's going to have a real monster campaign, and so far that's turned out well. Not that he's a sleeper, but he was sliding to the 10th pick, 12th pick in drafts. People saying I wouldn't even take him in the second round, and he's the number one player at the moment. So I was pretty happy with that. I got him in a couple of places. I was pretty big on Porzingis heading into the season, grabbed him in second round in some drafts, and he's been awesome. We were big on Miles Turner as well, and he's had a pretty good start to things. Who else have we got as a sleeper type player? D'Angelo Russell and Jonas Valanciunas, we had those guys ranked relatively highly, and they've sort of returned that level of value. I'd say that's fair. And Clint Capella is the other one. We were big on Clint Capella heading into the season, and after a rocky start and this happens a lot with coaches, is they just tend to like be weird at the start of the season. Like D'Antoni's going out there, let's just see if Nene is going to be our center of the future. Like Mike, he was never going to be. Like it's just never going to happen. Everyone can see it. It's taken 3 weeks, and Mike's gone, yeah, you know what, probably let's go with the young guy who can defend every position, switch out onto guards, protect the rim, and is athletic and can finish every one of Harden's alley-oops, rather than a 32-year-old old man who can't go more than 5 games without getting injured.
Yeah. Those are good. You mentioned Porzingis and Turner. Those are two guys for me as a basketball, analyst or whatever it is I do. Those were guys who obviously were great last year and showed great promise, but I think I was still kind of doubting coming into this season, and even outside of a fantasy relevancy, they've been incredible this year. And they also coincidentally also have been still killing it in fantasy. So I'm just blown away. You said you were high on him. So you just thought Porzingis would keep maybe making that leap and become like the Knicks. They're finally accepting, this is our guy, this is our go-to man.
Yeah, so look, Porzingis last year only played 28 minutes a game, and he was like a top 50 guy in that playing time. And my rationale was, okay, so we don't have the worst coach in the NBA coaching them anymore. He's just on the staff as an assistant.
Byron Scott did not work for the Knicks last year. I'm just pointing that out.
He didn't, but Kurt Rambis made a huge late charge to be the most ridiculous coach in NBA history, and he's pretty. Look, Byron Scott was consistently the worst, but those 3 or 4 months from Rambis were pretty up there. Yeah. They were impressive. But Porzingis, so he wasn't going to play 28 minutes a night. They were going to go. We had him. He's going to play 33. They're just going to go hard at him, and his percentages are going to come up. It's something that happens with young players all the time. All their shooting percentages come right out. We didn't expect they were going to. He's going to shooting like 48% from the field and like 42 from three, I believe. We didn't think it'd come up that high, but we did think that he'd have a big rise there, plus the extra 5 minutes, plus an increased pace from Hornacek that all tied into him having some pretty good production. And when he had that game early on the season where he only took 4 attempts, I thought, oh my God, Rose is going to ruin him. And then they realized, you know what, he's probably our best player. Let's just give him the ball. And when he's got the ball, there's literally nobody who can actually stop him scoring.
Yeah. Circling back to Anthony Davis, is that a guy he's obviously being incredible. He's being the player we've seen before in his career. Do you have confidence that where you have him on his team? I'll spit this question out. The places you have him on your fantasy teams, are you going to stick with him and ride him out the whole season? Or are you going to be nervous that these injuries might rear their heads? And are you going to try to cash him in and maybe trade him away?
No, I'm not trading him away, because look, he might get injured, but so might anybody. Look, and I use this example all the time. It is, you ask someone now about Russell Westbrook, and they'll say, oh, you know, the guy's injury prone. He's missed all these games with knee injuries over the past couple of years. He broke his hand. He broke his face. You know, he's a risk to get injured. But 3 years ago, the narrative on Russell Westbrook was, oh, he's never missed a game in his career. And he played every game in high school, in college, and in the NBA. The same with Dame Lillard, who then missed 2 weeks with a foot injury last year. So guys are injury prone until they're not, like Steph Curry. And guys aren't injury prone until they are, like Westbrook. So things change all the time. Maybe this is a change for Davis. Who knows? But I don't want to be second guessing myself for something that might happen in March and he might hurt himself and be out a week. Like anyone can get injured literally at any time. Like Chris Middleton, never injured before, out for the whole season with a hamstring tear. So yes, I don't place a huge amount of concern that it's a worry really with anybody. And there's an elevated worry with Davis, but I'm not seeking out, because who am I getting back in return? If I can get James Harden, maybe I would, but who else am I getting back that's going to approximate what Davis is getting me?
Right. No, I can't. Hey, you're the expert. Don't ask me. I just watch basketball. also, another guy who I have injury concerns, because this guy hurt me in several leagues last year, Eric Bledsoe. Eric Bledsoe's been fantastic so far this year. I think last five games, he's something like 26-8-7. Is he a guy you would consider trading, or would you also stick with him?
Not worried about him either. For the reason, look.
Same okay, reason.
Look, he's torn his meniscus last year, mm-hmm. and he'd done it previously on the opposite knee. But when he came back from that injury, he came back and played 81 games. So it's not like that he's just – the knee continually breaks down every year. He did it 3 years ago on the other knee, did it, and then came back and was fine and played an entire season. So I'm sort of banking on the fact that – he had the surgery. The team wasn't going anywhere last year. They could have done the repair instead of the removal, and that could have mean he came back earlier, but they did the longer-term, more fixable scenario, mm-hmm. and they look. Everything's been fine for him so far, and I've got a degree of – there's always a little bit of doubt with guys like that, but in the past we've seen him come back from a meniscus injury, play through it no problem, and not have any issues with that knee moving forward. Again, it was the other knee that caused the issue. So that's why I'm not as concerned with him.
Yeah. Which guys have had a hot start so far that you have the least confidence that they're going to keep it up? Like, are there any guys who you're like, this is definitely unsustainable?
Lou Williams is one of them. He's not going to continue to shoot at 46.5%, considering he's like been a 41% shooter for every year for about the last five or six seasons. So he won't keep up that rate, and that is going to drop his scoring down. He does nothing really in the other areas. So his numbers are going to come way down. He's playing five less minutes a game than what he was last season, and he's not going to be able to shoot at that elevated level. It's just not the player that he is. Wilson Chandler is also shooting 10% higher on long twos than what he has throughout his career. So he's been great, but I just feel it's going to be really tough for him to maintain his elevated field goal percentage. And that's especially in the early season. If people are way below on their field goal percentage or way ahead of where they normally are, it really changes their ranking a significant amount. And that's generally what I look to see guys who are maybe under or overvalued at this point of the season, if they're just way off what they're doing in terms of what they've done throughout their career, especially guys who are like 7, 8, 10% above or below sort of career numbers. And if there's something that just doesn't really make any sense moving forward. So they're two guys that I look at and go, look, that's probably not going to stick. Otto Porter is another one. He's shooting at 51% from the field. I find that hard to believe that he'll continue to be a 51% shooter from the field. And that puts him in the top 35. And I can't, once that comes down to maybe even 47, 48, we're talking about a drop of maybe 20, 30 spots. And that causes him to sort of fall off a little bit.
Yep. I'm going to throw another couple guys at you. I want to get your take on. What about Mike Conley so far? You think, we talk on our show a lot about the Grizzlies, and his three-point shooting percentage is really high. Do you think – I mean, assuming it's going to drop off some, but do you think his statistical output will maintain under this new coaching staff?
Yeah, I do. I was pretty bullish on Conley heading into the season. I think I had him higher than a lot of people. He's a top 20 guy at the moment. The thing is, his three-point percentage is really high, but his two-point percentage is actually not that high. So – if the three-point percentage comes down, the two-point percentage, you would imagine at some point is going to come up, because he's shooting under 44% from the field. It's not like he's going at 48% as a point guard and you go, there's no way that continues. You look at his overall field goal percentage at 44, which is buoyed by the 48% three-pointers. That means that he's not hitting his twos at a very high rate. So one might come down, but the other one will probably come up. And what he's doing in terms of getting his steal rate back up, which had been depressed over the last couple of years under Jaeger, that's coming back up. His assists are there. He's scoring at a high rate. I think that he's pretty fine for this sort of level, and I don't imagine a huge change in his overall value.
What about Kevin Love, who's been absolutely on fire in the last week and even the whole season? He's pretty much – he's close to getting his Minnesota numbers back on the Cavs. You think he can keep it up?
Not to this level, but yeah, he's going to be better than I think than what we've seen over the past two seasons in Cleveland. I don't think he's going to be 25-12 Kevin Love that we saw in Minnesota for big chunks of time. But what we're seeing now feels fairly sustainable. There's nothing for me to go, oh, but what about when Kyrie gets back to full minutes, or what about when LeBron does this? Like, the Cavs are the Cavs. This is what they are. This is how they're playing. The ridiculous three-point shooting at the moment, where I think he's banged in 23s in the last three games, is probably not going to continue. But everything else and the way they're using him and his role in the offense, I think, remains the same.
Yeah. Also, Nick Young. He's my comeback player of the year. I didn't think he'd be in the NBA.
Neither did I. I can't believe it. But he is also shooting at a very, very elevated rate, 42% from three, which he's been a three-point shooter, but he's never shot at this level. In the last 2 years, we're talking about low 30s in percentages. He was under 40% from the field in those last 2 years. And this year, his two-point percentage is like 10 or 12% higher than what he's done the last couple of years. So I do imagine that some of his efficiency will drop off. I don't think that he's going to be shooting at the 46% that he currently is. And like Williams as well, that he just does nothing in any of the other areas. So to get an assist or a steal out of Nick Young is something that's, miraculous, basically. And yeah. if that shooting comes back to 41, 42%, then his scoring comes back to, instead of 14 points, it comes back to 11.5 points or something along those lines. And then he drops right out of the top 100 consideration. So, yeah, he's been great, but, yeah, it's just based on who he is. And, yeah, look, different system, different coach, all that sort of stuff, but that doesn't always – for a guy that's 31 years of age to all of a sudden shoot 6 or 7% better, it's very rare to happen, especially when he contributes in no other areas.
Right. Another question. I'm curious. This might be the Tony Roten Award, who I know you always hated. Yep. You always hated Tony Roten. I've always had a soft spot for him. I'm curious, which player to you has the largest gap in his fantasy value against what his actual help a team win a basketball game value is?
Good question. I like that. Tony Roten's the king. That's the Tony Roten Award. He's the king of that. Terrence Jones is up there.
Okay.
So Terrence Jones, when he plays minutes, the fantasy stats come. Like, he'll go out there and block two shots and get 20 points and have 10 boards and hit two threes. And you go, okay, well, that's cool. And then he goes out there and just does Josh Smith stuff, like above the break threes with 20 seconds left on the shot clock, falling asleep on defense. And you see it now, like on a team that is playing in the front court, Omer Asik, Alexia Zinsser, and was playing Dante Cunningham there. The fact that he can go out there some nights and play 13 minutes is a real – it's either an indictment on him, or it's an indictment on Elvin Gentry, or it's an indictment on both of them. But given the way that Jones has played over his career, he just does so many incorrect things while being able to accumulate stats. And he's very much a favorite of the fantasy community. So as soon as he puts up some big numbers, I just get inundated. Oh, do I grab Terrence Jones? Like, yeah, you can, but – he's going to play 18 minutes in the next game and have 4 points and get benched for the whole game because he made some series of ridiculous errors. So I'd say that probably Jones is the guy whose real life play does not necessarily marry his fantasy play. I'd put Kent Bazemore close to that as well.
Oh, a shout to Kent. I don't know if I'll stand for that. I enjoy Kent Bazemore, even though he's been a little off this year.
A little?
One guy who has my attention, or I'm at least putting on Tony Roten notice, and this guy's young. This is very popular among NBA Twitter. Devin Booker is he's terrible. Like, I've had him, I think, on every fantasy team I've had in the last 2 years. Like, he puts up huge scoring numbers, and every now and then he'll pitch in with some, like, random steals, random blocks, some assists. But, like, he seems to have no concept of when he's supposed to shoot, and he is so bad at defense. Like, Bradley Beal lit him up for 42 points, I think, the other night. Like, I watched Devin Booker, and I'm like, I don't know if, like, if you replaced him with a guy who just knew when he was supposed to shoot, I think the Suns might be doing better. But, again, I guess there's some leeway because he's still 20 or however old he is.
Keith, I'm glad you brought it up because I will. I have mentioned Devin Booker on the show before, and I get a lot of angry emails and tweets about it when I do say it, because I say, you know what, we all talk about Booker and we say, look, he can be Klay Thompson, and that's because they both look the same,
right?
Really, when you look at him, they look the same. But Booker is not a good shooter, and he might become a good shooter. But all available evidence tells us that he is not a good shooter. We have never seen him be a good shooter. He's a below-average three-point shooter last year, and there was the excuse last year, okay, he was 19 years old, I know that, and he was having, you know, all the offensive attention put onto him with Eric Bledsoe and Brandon Knight out. I know all that as well. But Bledsoe's back this year. Knight's back this year. TJ Warren's taking on a large scoring role, and he's still not a good shooter. He's at 42% from the field. He's at 34% from three. He makes some tough shots at times. He scores at times, but he is a guy that takes way too many mid-range jumpers. And his playmaking ability that we saw on display in preseason has not happened at all. His ability to get steals in the preseason has not happened at all. His defense is atrocious. He can't get a rebound. At this point, I'm with you. He's not good at this point, but he could very well become good. But we anoint him as like, oh, he is this knockdown shooter, and he's just not. That is just absolutely not his game. He is not Klay Thompson. He is not someone who goes out there and hits 42% of his threes and takes 60% of his shots from there. He takes like 30% from there and hits 30%. He's a completely different player, but we get caught up in that he's the next Klay Thompson because they both look the same.
Yeah, I'm putting him on Tony Roten alert. Just I hope he pulls out of it. But he's a guy
he could easily pull out of it.
He's a guy who I think could improve his shooting percentage by 6 percentage points if he just changed his shot selection. You know, like it's like Bledsoe is playing so well that it makes such a contrast that like when he passes to Devin Booker and then Devin Booker just tries to get to like an 18-foot pull up, like that's his goal. And it's like he does it so much. And I might have watched more Suns games than anybody but the Grizzlies over the last 2 years. And I just keep scratching my head. It's like, what's going on? And then he'll hit like three in a row. And it's kind of like Kobe disease where like we remember the three in a row that were all kind of incredible. And we're like, oh, he's on fire. And like, oh, he was 6 for 19 that game, you know? So
yeah,
who knows?
He only takes 29% of his shots from three. And so that's not the signal of a guy. I believe Marcus Sol and Brook Lopez take more of their shots from three than what Devin Booker does.
Yeah.
And that's something that can't continue. Like he's taking 29% from three. He's taking, you know, 37% from between 10 feet and the 3-point line. So mid-range twos are higher than 3 points. And that's not the recipe for an efficient shooter.
Yeah. All right, well, kind of wrapping up, since I am a fantasy novice and you are an expert, you play in a ton of leagues, and I'm sure you've been doing it for a long time. I'm curious, right now I'm playing in a nine category league. Do you think that's the best one, or is there a favorite scoring system that you think is the best?
I don't like turnovers at all. So that's your standard ninth category. I'm still on the sort of lookout to find out what's going to work best as a ninth category. My one that I'm going to try next season as a sort of a blanket thing across a lot of my leagues is getting rid of turnovers, but splitting field goal percentage into 2-point percentage and 3-point percentage and splitting it up that way rather than some people go and add something like free throws made as a ninth category. I hate that because basically that just means you're adding points as an extra category. So every time you make a free throw, you get one added onto your points column and one added onto your free throws made column. So I don't like that because it's a double up. Turnovers really frustrate me. I never pay any attention to them in any league that I'm in. I consistently punt them in every single situation that I'm in. And I reckon there has to be a better option. And I want to explore that 2-point, 3-point percentage split.
Yeah, that's great. Because actually my follow-up question that I'd written out was, is there a better option than turnovers? Because the turnover category has been killing me, where it's like, if I don't play guys, I win that category. That doesn't make sense. You know, like,
yeah, exactly.
Like I've had situations where I'm like on Sunday where you're like, do I need to bench half of my guys like to win this category? So yeah, I was curious. Yeah. If you find a better option, let me know. Cause I feel like that ninth category that we're doing, it feels wrong. It feels wrong to ever bench your people and that would benefit you or you would have an advantage by playing fewer players. But anyway, hey Josh, tell us, also, How are you dealing with Nikola Mirotic not having a breakout season?
It's bumming me out, to be honest.
I know you love him.
But I'm not okay with it. I've accepted it that he's just not going to get a bigger role unless Taj Gibson goes down, which is always a possibility. Taj has got those ankles that are made out of a packet of crisps. Basically, they'll disintegrate at any time. So he could get an opportunity there, but it is frustrating, especially when he goes out and played that one game where Wade rested and had like a massive double-double, blocked and steals and hit threes and played 37 minutes and then went and played 22 in the next game. Taj has played well. Robin Lopez has played well. No concern there. Bobby Portis has been absolutely dreadful, and there's no reason for him to get 10 minutes a night so that Mirotic can play just 20. That's my major issue with the way that Højbjerg has run things with Mirotic, but I've accepted it right at this point.
you're in the acceptance stage of grief. That's very...
Yeah. Definitely.
That's very sad. All right, can you give me anybody I need to pick up that can save my season? Is there anyone out there?
Look, the guy that seems to be really under-owned in leagues is Mo Harkless, and he's been great this season. I don't see Alan Crabb taking his role away. I don't see Evan Turner taking his role away. He's doing things in multiple areas, and he's available in lots of different leagues. So if Mo Harkless is around, he's a guy that I'm making sure that I'm grabbing and always just trying to attack people who are in slumps and seeing if you can grab those guys for cheap and do it that way. But Harkless is probably the waiver wire guy that I'd be considering.
Yeah, we're in a deep league. Mo Harkless is long gone. And wrapping it back around to real life, he's a guy the Orlando Magic seems like they wish they hadn't given away for absolutely nothing.
Well, that's exactly right. That's when we talk about the Orlando Magic front office misfirings, we often forget about Harkless. We always bring up the Tobias Harris trade for nothing, the Victor Oladipo one, but they literally gave up Harkless for nothing for a top 55 protected second round pick, which is nothing. Yeah. And it is ridiculous.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Hey, well, Josh, tell people where they can follow your stuff. Hopefully most of you guys are already listening to Locked On Fantasy, but for you real fantasy basketball fans who don't know Josh's stuff, you should follow all his stuff. So Josh, tell them where they can get all the information they need.
You can follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. Obviously, you can find the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, and it's also on YouTube as well. So you can find it there. And my site is basketballmonster.com.
Yeah, so go to basketballmonster.com and follow Josh on Twitter. Well, Josh, hey, it was great to catch up with you again, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for being on the show.
No worries, Keith. Thanks for having me.
All right, that was great stuff from my buddy Josh. Hopefully my fantasy team can turn it around, although it's doubtful. Hopefully Mike Conley keeps it up. That'd be better news. All right, you guys go to fastbreakbreakfastpodcast.com. Also, now we own Fast Break Breakfast. Shout out to the company that started emailing me, offering to sell me the domain name for way more, letting me know the domain was available now. So I got it from, GoDaddy for $3. So fastbreakbreakfast.com is now ours. So go there, check out our site. If you want to buy something, buy some Christmas gifts from our store there. And again, you serious listeners who want to step it up to the next level, go to patreon.com/fastbreakbreakfast and support us. All right, follow us on Twitter at @FastBreakBreak. Like us on Facebook. Nashville people, come to the watch party Wednesday night. You guys are the best. Thanks for listening. And remember, breakfast is the most important thing.